On this episode of Skeptico, we'll hear from Dr. Rupert Sheldrick and Dr. Richard Wiseman on whether dogs can know when their owners are coming home. Stay with us for Skeptico.
Welcome to Skeptico, where we explore controversial science with leading thinkers, researchers, and their critics. I'm your host, Alex Sakaris. We're going to do something a little bit different today. I want to dig into an experiment that I think many of you probably know about or maybe think you know about. I think we're going to maybe explore some new aspects to it. And that is looking at whether some dogs have the ability to know when their owners are coming home and whether they can show that they know by anticipating going to the window or the door before the owner gets within sight or gets within a range that they can hear about. So this work was first explored by Dr. Rupert Sheldrick and then was followed up from a skeptical perspective by Dr. Richard Wiseman. So what I thought we'd do today is dig into this experiment, play some clips from those two researchers, and look at what's going on here. And the reason for doing this is that this is the experiment that we've chosen to be the first experiment to be replicated on open source science. Now, if you haven't heard about opensourcescience.net, it's a new collaborative effort between, it's open to anyone, but we're really trying to draw in the skeptical community and controversial researchers to dig into, in a scientific, open way, replicating experiments that show some promise, are still preliminary, but need to be replicated and need to be tightened up so that they can gain more widespread acceptance. Again, the first experiment that we've chosen, because it's shown in its preliminary findings, very, very significant, strong indication that there's something there, is this anticipatory behavior that dogs have when their owners are coming home. And if you're a dog owner and a dog lover, maybe you can help us by contributing your stories. Or if you have a dog that you think really exhibits this behavior, then we'd love to have you become a participant in this experiment. And we'll be showing live in some cases, but in other cases, we'll just be showing video of dogs actually doing this. So the whole experiment's going to be a very, very serious undertaking. It's going to be done in association with major universities across the country and replicated by real researchers. And we're looking forward to getting your input and your participation in this experiment. So I thought we would then dig into this a little bit more, and we're going to hear some clips from both Dr. Rupert Sheldrick and Dr. Richard Wiseman on this and try and frame up what has happened thus far so that we can figure out where we best need to tighten up the controls. And besides tightening it up, we also want to web enable it. We want to make it more available, more accessible to a larger audience that can see it, participate in it, and understand it. Because I think one of the goals in both open source science and Skeptico is to show that science is understandable. It's accessible. It's more accessible than it ever was. Back when a lot of us were going to school, we didn't have access to scientific papers if we did want to read them. I wasn't so inclined when I was a student, but they just weren't accessible. It's changed a lot since then. Part of it is that science is much more interdisciplinary. So when scientists and science writers write, they write for a large audience that even a scientific audience that might not understand the details of their field. All of which is to say, we can all dig into this. We can all understand it with just a little bit of effort. So without anything more from me, I want to dig into some of these clips and play them for you. And I'm going to introduce them, and then I'm going to let you hear from our guests. The first is going to be some clips from Dr. Rupert Sheldrick. And these are taken from a debate that he had with Professor Chris French from the Department of Psychology at Goldsmiths College at the University of London. This debate was held at Trinity College in Cambridge on November 29th, 2006. I'll have, of course, a clip in the show notes to the full debate. The whole thing is very, very interesting. But I really want to pick out the clips that directly address this experiment because I think it's new information that some of you may not have, and it's definitely relevant to our discussion. So let's start with Dr. Sheldrick's definition of telepathy.
I should emphasize that my own attitude is based on the idea that telepathy, if it exists, is natural, not supernatural. It's normal, not paranormal. Paranormal meaning beyond the normal. I think if it exists, it's part of nature. I think if it exists, it's going to be biological, a form of animal communication within animal groups. If so, it's going to have an evolutionary advantage, and that's something on which there's been very little work done, but it's already possible to sketch out some of the possibilities that might lead to natural selection favoring telepathic abilities.
Okay, so now that we understand from Dr. Sheldrick's standpoint that he's talking about something that's a natural phenomena rather than a supernatural phenomena, it shouldn't be surprising that he sees the scientific investigation of this being completely in line with science. And let's hear him speak to that point.
If it exists, it's potentially explicable in terms of an enlarged kind of physics. This would not mean the collapse of science and civilization as we know it. Rather, it would mean the expansion of science to encompass new areas that are at present not included within it. There's a great deal we don't understand about the nature of the mind. There are many outstanding mysteries within physics. It may well be that there are principles of which we as yet know nothing that could help to explain telepathy.
Okay, so he's addressing a point that you'll often hear hardcore skeptics make without really thinking it through, and that's that the discoveries that may be made in the areas of psi or the paranormal are going to undermine science as we know it. And I think that he makes the case quite well that that's not necessarily the case, and that's certainly not a very scientific view, that we shouldn't look at something because it might overturn our existing theories. You know, next he makes a point that I think is so often overlooked in psi research, and that's the emotional connection and the emotional need that binds the sender and the receiver in this kind of telepathic kind of situation. I think too often in these psi experiments, these parapsychology experiments I read about, we're talking about random college students doing some kind of task that has no emotional bond to it. You know, I mean, flipping coins or anything like that. And I think as Dr. Sheldrick alludes to in this quote and in some of his other writings and his talks, that we may be looking for psi, we may be looking for this connection in consciousness in the wrong place when we look at it in just the random population. So I think this is a really important point.
I think that the same principles apply in human telepathy as in animal telepathy. It depends on close bonds, emotional connections, and things which have, in many cases, a physiological and emotional and biological need.
And as far as how this research fits into the larger picture of science?
So this is an open question. It's not a kind of dogmatic crusade. It's a question of exploring what we don't know in a scientific spirit. And personally, I think this is one of the most exciting and promising areas of scientific research one could hope for. There's so little known, there's so much we could know. There's so little research being done, so much that could be done. I think this could become one of the most exciting areas of all science, which would inspire and encourage young people to take an interest in the subject rather than being put off, as so many are at present.
All right, next, Dr. Sheldrick gives us an overview of the dog anticipation experiments.
My own research has mostly been concerned with telepathy in much more homely and natural situations. A lot of it's been concerned with pets. I don't have time to talk about all of this, but many people who have dogs and cats believe that their animals are telepathic and pick up their intentions. Is this a mere delusion or wishful thinking caused by the doting pet owners anthropomorphically projecting onto their pets, something like that, or is something really happening? Well, the many topics of the can be investigated, but the one I've focused on most is dogs and cats that seem to know when their owners are coming home. The data here show that about 50% of dog owners in random surveys and about 30% of cat owners think their animals anticipate the arrival of a member of the family by going and waiting at a door or window, sometimes 10 minutes or even half an hour in advance, even when the person comes home at randomly selected times, even if they come by unfamiliar vehicles. What's going on? Well, again, the kind of standard dismissive response is, oh, well, it's just an illusion. They're not looking at the... They just remember the times the dog's at the window. They forget the times it's wrong, and so forth. The way to test that is to do videotaped experiments where the subject comes home at random times by unfamiliar vehicles. I've done many of those tests, and the results show a highly significant positive effect.
And I would add that since we've been replicating this experiment on opensourcescience.net, and this is really just in the last couple days, I've actually gone on some forums where dog owners are chatting and have asked for stories of this kind. And it's amazing. Just in a couple of visits, you immediately get stories that directly fall in line with what Dr. Sheldrick's describing, and people who can really describe very unusual situations under which it occurs, and they can also differentiate. So people will say, yeah, I think it happens, but it seems to be a routine. And then another person will say, no, you know, I've had it happen where I've come home at very odd hours and my husband has been home, and I know when my husband's coming home because the dog will go sit by the window 15 minutes before and he never comes home at the same time. So all you have to do is go out and look in the forums, post a message, and you'll get a ton of these stories.
And this was criticized by skeptics, not surprisingly. And I invited one of them, Richard Wiseman, a former Perrott Warwick scholar, to do his own tests with JT. He did do some tests with JT, and he did three tests under the same conditions as these. And as you see, the pattern, the graph pattern, is almost identical. He portrayed this as a failure because he said that the dog had gone to the window before the owner set off home, which the dog did in all my own tests, or most of my own tests as well. And he said, therefore, it had given a false alarm and the rest of the data could be discarded. And they didn't count.
Okay, so now we get into one of the real major controversies in the studies done by Rupert Sheldrick and then the counterclaims made by Richard Wiseman, who you may recall was also on the Skeptico show and talked about these experiments that he did with Dr. Sheldrick. So just so you understand, these two were trying to measure whether the dog anticipated the owner's arrival. So the owner goes out, they send the owner out on a trip, randomly call them at some time on their cell phone and say, okay, come home. So no one knows when the owner's coming home. And then they're videotaping the dog and saying if the dog is in sync with the owner and is going to the window or the door at the same time that the owner's coming home. Now, the controversy really arose because Richard Wiseman, when he was doing the experiment, he talked to the dog owner and said, you know, I've heard that the dog goes to the window as soon as that signal is given. So that's what we're going to measure. That first going to the door or window for a long period, for a couple minutes, is going to be the measure. You'll hear that Sheldrick really kind of took offense to that because he said, hey, that's not the way that I've been doing it. I think the best way to do it, and it's actually a way that Wiseman had suggested when they talked about the experiment beforehand, was to measure the amount of time that the dog spends by the window during each 10-minute interval while the person is away. So what Sheldrick proposed was, let's measure the amount of time that the dog spends by the window when the owner's coming home versus the amount of time that the dog spends by the window when the owner isn't coming home, and compare the two. So that's what the controversy is really talking about.
When we come to some of the more detailed things, I don't have time to go into the details of Wiseman and my dispute over this dog. But it's all there in the literature if any of you want to read blow-by-blow accounts. But essentially, I was doing experiments with the dog. I was finding this big waiting effect, which I showed. Wiseman came along. He did four tests. Four experiments took him 2 days. I did 100 tests. Took me a year and a half. And he only got them so easily done because I set up everything for him to do them. So he didn't put in a huge amount of effort. He put in a great deal more effort into publicizing his negative interpretation of the results. He didn't base them on what I'd found and had. He didn't ask me what I'd found. He based them on a so-called claim that he heard on a TV show about this dog and said he was testing that as the claim and that any other analysis of the data was post hoc. I'd already been plotting my data on graphs long before Wiseman showed up on the scene. I plotted his on the same kind of graphs as I plotted my own, got the same effect. Anyway, he and I, if we were here together, no doubt would be able to go on at length about our differences of interpretation. But I don't, in this case, the idea of post hoc analysis is not appropriate.
Okay, so there he also brings up and kind of really addresses this whole issue of post hoc analysis, which if you hear from skeptics who are unfamiliar with really looking at the case, they'll sometimes throw this up that he did a post hoc analysis or a data mining thing. And if you really read the literature, you'll find that's not the case at all. And these guys had discussed different ways of kind of measuring it. And it was actually Richard Wiseman's suggestion to go on the 10-minute interval basis that Sheldrick has presented his data on. So that doesn't really kind of hold water. So next, let's hear from Dr. Richard Wiseman, who was nice enough to join me on Skeptico a few weeks ago. And he made some very interesting comments about this experiment. And if you weren't already kind of well aware of kind of some of the details of the experiment, some of these things might have just kind of passed you by.
I suspect in this particular instance, we were addressing two different questions. I was looking at something that had been on television and saying, is that true? And running an experiment to assess that claim and concluding it wasn't. Rupert was, I think, asking the far more general question, well, is JT psychic, though? Running a much larger number of experiments and coming to the conclusion that, yes, indeed, he is. So I think we were actually looking at two different questions, which is where some of the confusion is.
All right. So I guess from that we have to interpret Richard Wiseman's comment as meaning that he was really coming in as a debunker and that Sheldrick was doing more detailed research. I don't know what you think about debunking, and I don't think debunking is bad. I think debunking is a good role for skeptics to play. However, in this case, I think we'd have to say that debunking wasn't appropriate, and what we really needed to do was collaborative research, and that's what open source science is trying to do going forward. And that's something that Dr. Richard Wiseman is very much in favor of and has expressed those views and has expressed his support for replicating these experiments. So next, there is this issue of the data. Now, these guys, Richard Wiseman and Rupert Sheldrick, battled back and forth for years over whether or not Sheldrick should be using Wiseman's data as a replication of his experiments. And this really became quite a contentious issue. On the Skeptico broadcast, I think you'll hear Richard Wiseman conceding that yes, the data that he collected in his experiments do, in fact, match Sheldrick's data, and I can only interpret that as being that it's therefore appropriate to view them as a replication of Sheldrick's findings. Here's that clip.
I don't think there's any debate that the patterning in my studies are the same as the patterning in Rupert's studies. That's not up for grabs. That's fine. It's how it's interpreted.
So we are left with that little, it's how it's interpreted, but he doesn't really explain exactly how that might be misinterpreted. And likewise, in this last clip from Richard Wiseman, we'll hear his conclusion on the experiments, which, in conclusion, is not favorable for the experiments.
In this particular instance, I'm not that impressed with the data that Rupert's collected. I think it's really interesting. I think there's still some methodological problems with it, and part of that is because you're trying to do an experiment in the real world with an animal, and that's just inherently a rather sort of messy thing to do.
So here again, we're left with kind of a general claim that there are some methodological problems with the experiments, although he doesn't really detail what those are. And I should encourage all of you to read as many of the papers as you can or care to on this experiment. They're all referenced on Open Source Science. And you really get a sense for the give and take, the back and forth, and really the impact or the significance of the rather conciliatory tone that a Wiseman is kind of striking here. He's even saying, oh, there's probably a lot of problems associated with just the normal things that go on in working with a dog and a human in the field, which of course is true. We are left, however, with what those methodological problems might be. We're addressing those on open source science. I have to add personally that I don't see any huge methodological problems other than the one raised by Dr. Sue Blackmore in a critique she did of the experiment, where she noted that, hey, you know, the longer the trip goes on, the more likely the dog is to be anticipating that the owner's coming home. The owner isn't home in an hour. Now the dog's going to start going to the door window more and more, and that this might influence the statistics. The follow-on to that is that the experiment was replicated, and they did additional very long trials, and they even did trials where the owner would not come home at all during the night. And they still found those to be highly statistically significant and exhibiting the same behavior as before. So I think some of that has been addressed, but certainly, the bottom line is there needs to be a lot more work in this area. So there you have it, a short overview of the experiment that we're replicating on open source science. Again, I encourage all of you to check out opensourcescience.net. We'll have a link to that in the Skeptico show notes. Join us. Give us your comments, your suggestions. We're really in the dialogue on open source science. It's really not about the philosophy or the any kind of carping about your ideas on skepticism or your ideas on psi. It's really about replicating these experiments and the methodological and analytical techniques that will be used to replicate these. Also, if there's any of you out there who are dog owners or dog lovers and would like to recommend a dog or would like to help us try and find dogs that are particularly good at exhibiting this behavior, that'd be a huge help. That's what we're really undertaking right now, is to find some superstar dogs out there. So that's it in terms of an introduction to open source science. Next week, we have another interview coming up and some very interesting interviews coming up after that. So thanks for joining me, and bye for now.